And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I
so,
swore a solemn
my family
vow
was really intense.
I was invited to a party.
Totally
and
different.
I never been
I come from a large Irish, Italian, Catholic family.
Time once again for Stories from Ex Fabula on Lake Effect Weekend. Good afternoon. I'm Bruce Winter. Leah Delaney from Ex Fabula is here. She is one of the co-founders of the group, and every week brings us stories to listen to. These are true stories. They are real from real people, and they are told without notes or writing on your hand or anything like that. It's a live event, live storytelling. Thank you so much for bringing these in every week. And today, we've got kind of a hook with these healthcare stories you've brought.
Yeah, we do. The effects of storytelling between caregiver and patient in the healthcare place is extraordinary. There have been a lot of articles as of late and how when patients are able to give more details of their symptoms and their ailments to the caregiver has a better understanding of what's going on in their lives and a better understanding on how to give the patient the care that they need. And so in light of all of that, we decided to have a couple stories of under the guise of healthcare today. And we're going to start out with a story from Brooke Maroldi. She told a story about her experience with crossing over at our event, aptly named Crossing Over. So here's Brooke Maroldi's healthcare-related story.
I don't think it was any coincidence that both my father and I had insomnia when I was growing up. I would wake up in the middle of the night and we'd watch black and white movies together. Eventually, he would get me back to my room and make a little game out of running his hands down my face to close my eyes and get me back to sleep. Fast forward a lifetime later, a week after having open heart surgery, my 80-year-old father has yet to wake up. They remove life support, and he gently slips away. I take my hand and close his eyes for the last time. Fast forward 5 years later, it's a beautiful sunny day, the first day of spring, a day when Wisconsinites have to be outside. And my husband and I drive down to the lakefront. When I get out of the car, I am hit by a pain in my left shoulder blade that absolutely floors me. I have to go home. I don't remember how long I was asleep, but I do remember this. I saw my father racing across the room like he was on an urgent mission. I called after him, "Dad!" He didn't look back, he just kept going. "Dad, Dad, where are you going?" My heart was ready to burst when I woke up, still calling, "Dad, Dad." When an overweight, middle-aged smoker goes into the emergency room with chest pains, they really pay attention. I was hooked up to IVs, monitors, oxygen. They ripped off my clothes, and it was not sexy. A nurse shouts out, "BP 185 over," and it all went black. Silence. I'm suspended in a black velvet ocean, an ocean that was everywhere and nowhere. I'm fully conscious, unafraid, and I hear a voice. "Are you back? Are you back?" Zoom! I look up to the ER doctor, looking down at me, still holding the paddles that had shocked me back to life. I'm back, but where was I? "Oh, you were gone for a little while. You'll be okay." 2 days later, I'm discharged with two stents in my arteries and a black and white diagram of the human heart. One artery, 75% blocked. Second artery, 95% blocked. Yeah, it was okay, but where had I gone? And why was I so angry? I mean, all I had to do was look down at the burns and bruises on my chest to remember that a whole team of people worked their asses off to bring me back. I should have been grateful, but I wasn't. And I didn't know why. And where was that frickin' tunnel with the light and the angels and all that good stuff? What? So I worked on my own heart. I even became a vegan, which in Wisconsin is a lot like being Amish. But there was still that anger. I had come to realize I had been harboring resentments, hurt, disappointments, regret. So I started practicing forgiveness for all the things, both real and imagined, that had ever hurt me. And I started meditating. I've revisited that black velvet ocean many times. What is that place? It can't be quantified or measured. I know we're all connected to that source. I can't get there in my head. I can only get there in my heart. And I can finally feel grateful that my father woke me up that night. Thank you.
And that was Brooke Maroldi, who told her crossing over story back in October.
That's very interesting, because I like the line, you know, where's the white light? Where's the tunnel? It's, you know, I'm in this black morass instead. But getting back to your setup to this, and that is letting the patients tell stories or share stories with caregivers and such. What I have noticed with all my medical experiences is they have people at some places now, they're not chaplains or anything like that, but they're kind of like listeners who come to visit patients in the rooms and just to say, sit down for 10 minutes or whatever and talk with people.
Relating is a really great way to heal in a lot of ways. And in fact, at our events that we have, our story slams or any particular events, the storytelling, the storyteller stands on stage and it has this unique ability to relate to the audience. And there's articles written about synapses and brains and how people are able to automatically line up their synapses with the storyteller, because there's that inherent need to just keep relating. And so you can imagine if two people are sitting around, you know, the caretaker and the patient, and just the ability to share a moment, mm-hmm. and how powerful that can be, yeah. and just kind of take you out of what's going on, and mm-hmm. and also give the caregiver a little bit more information of what's actually happening with the patient.
Yeah.
It's pretty powerful stuff.
It's amazing research.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, our next story is a little bit lighter in tone. It's
yes.
not it's not about the, you know, traversing the black morass between life and death, but
this one comes from Matthew Conkle, who told a story at our Spectacular, which is a huge event we have at Turner Hall Ballroom in December every year. This was a really, really fantastic story about his experience with a vasectomy.
I've had some bad company in my life. Visitors I felt I could do without. But in this particular situation, this bad company was not going to listen to any type of aggressive reasoning or intellectual persuasion to incite it to leave. My bad company was very much a part of me, and it required something a bit more extreme to have it removed from the situation. This bad company I speak of is that carrier of information, that persistent fertilizer, that seed of seeds known as spermatozoa. In 1995, I had a vasectomy. I was 25 years old at the time, without children, and I was not at all interested in cultivating any garden saplings. In my case, I was more than content to leave going forth and multiplying to others, because procreating was not for me. Now, let me make a couple of things clear. One, I have tremendous respect for parents. It's probably the most difficult job in the world. My mother and father, I don't know how they raised four boys. It's for some people, it's a great choice. And two, I love kids. I love working with kids. All of the multiple jobs that I hold to make ends meet have something to do with young people and arts education. I love their raw, creative energy. That's something that I feed off of. And I love how willing they are to just jump right in and try. And I love that when my job of teaching them art skills is over, that they go to someone else's home. In 1995, after 2 years in a relationship, I simply could not handle the stress anymore of my girlfriend being late. And I don't mean late to work, I mean that kind of late, which it seemed like she was a lot, and the subsequent stress of waiting for the results of the pregnancy tests. I needed something that was 100% effective all the time before I went completely out of my not wanting to father a child mind. The stress was having an effect on my health, and I couldn't concentrate, so finally I just decided to get the thing done so I could stop worrying about it. I had to go to three different urologists before I found one who was willing to give me the operation. Me being 25 at the time and childless, most were reluctant to perform the procedure. And I had to explain every time how my decision to not have children was very lucid. It was not something that I'd simply decided upon in the commercial break between Seinfeld and Frasier. It was I had thought about it for a couple of years and, you know, done some research on the procedure and talked to other people and got other people's opinions, and I knew that it was going to be the best thing for me in my life. On the day of the operation, I had my brother drive me in. On the way there, he asked me, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Now, my brother had gotten a vasectomy about a year earlier, and I was going to the same urologist. "Are you sure you want to do this?" my brother asked. I turned to him, nodded, and said yes. So I go in for the operation. It's actually really a very simple procedure. You're in and out in less than an hour. Probably the most difficult part about it is that first initial shot of anesthetic that they give you to neutralize the security in the area that they're going to be breaching. After that, you're just on your back, ironically, in a birthing pose. But maybe worse than the anesthetic is later that day when the painkiller wears off. Yeah, 2 days with a bag of ice between your legs might be paradise for some people, but I found it uncomfortable. I don't know. That's just me. After the operation, they tell you that it'll take 10 to 12 rocket launches before you're spaceman free. So my girlfriend at the time agreed to operate the command center to oversee the gathering of the sample for testing. So we got the sample and took it in, and 2 days later they called and said that the bad company had been officially and permanently jettisoned. I never told my parents I was getting the operation, and I only recently officially told them. Not that they were surprised. I pretty much figured that my parents knew by this time, I'm 43, that I was not all too keen on the fathering role. I have three older brothers. They all have children, so my parents were never lacking for grandchildren to spoil. I've told a few select people over the years, but mostly I've kept the information between me, myself, and other women that I've been intimate with. Reactions from the women have varied to blank stares, to "you what?" to "that's great." I've made a fair number of bad decisions in my life, but I never had any regrets about getting this decision, never had any regrets about getting this operation. If I had ever fathered a child, I feel confident that I would have made a good parent, but I also feel that my heart would not have been 100% in it, and that's not good, because then there's a chance that I would become the bad company to that child, and that's not something that I was interested in doing. So I made the decision to get it done, and it allowed me to focus my attention on creative pursuits like writing and theater. So I'm really happy I got rid of the bad company, because it was one of the best decisions I ever made. Thank you.
And that was Matthew Conkle with his lighter fared story.
Oh, boy. There's always X-Fabulous shows, it seems, around the corner. And anytime you want to know when there's a next story slam or a workshop or special event, there's a place to get all that information.
And membership and all that jazz. It's at exfabula.com, and that's exfabula.com.
We'll see you next week with more great stories.
Sounds great, Bruce. Thank you.
Thanks.
X-Fabula comes your way each week on Lake Effect Weekend, and it wraps up our show today. I'm Mitch Tye.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for making us a part of your afternoon. Lake Effect Weekend comes your way every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 4. And, of course, you can hear the weekday version of our show at 10 in the morning.
It's all on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned now. All Things Considered is next. It's 4 o'clock.